jump, 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 jump.
I said a hip hop, the hibbit of a hip hip hopper, you don't stop.
Rap, rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp it up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the Sharkle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's time to talk about the news of the week or whatever else comes up. And I suspect with my two guests today, it might well be a whatever else comes up because they both can chat. One's done it professionally many, many times before. That's Marty Stanovich. So currently, in his current life, he is the president and CEO of First Tee Gulf Coast. Marty?
Only for 14 years.
There you go. Right. Just recently started this. Yeah. And then, you know, Brian Wire, who is the president and CEO of the Gulf Coast Minority Chamber of Commerce. Brian?
Good morning, Andrew.
The first for both of you. On the wrap.
Yes, it is.
This is very exciting.
No, I've been on, but I only get invited on when you're not in.
Well, that's not the wrap, see?
When John Hutchinson is doing it?
That's something else. Oh, wait, you did the wrap with John when I was out on a Friday?
More than once.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, see, the things I learn about my own show when I'm not paying attention. I love it. Brian, of course, I was in Leap with your wife, with Harriet.
Yes.
So, you know, she's fabulous, of course. So, first thing, cause I'm sure there are people, Marty, who don't know First Tee. I'm sure there are. There are always people who don't know stuff.
Sure.
So people who don't know First Tee, tell them what you do. Other than shelter in the storm when you're trying to have a tournament. Last Friday.
We are, last Thursday evening, we did get hit by the non-tornado tornado. So come look at my video camera, see all the swirling winds and stuff flying around and call that straight line winds. Rocket scientists down at the EOC. We teach golf skills and life skills to young people ages 5 to 18, and we do it regardless of ability to pay. And we only seek two outcomes, good citizen, golfer for life. That's it. We're not trying to grow future professionals, but we are trying to grow people who will play the game. And, you know, I can tell you I started playing 52 years ago, and all the other sports that I played, they're pretty much all gone other than tennis. And I'm really not very good at tennis anymore because I got old.
Because your body changes and your knees say stop. Please quit.
They do.
Please don't do this to us anymore.
Gravity is just awful.
This is a question out of ignorance, but I know you'll know the answer. On Spanish Trail at the end, at the southern end,
yes.
There was a project in the works, and I think it's been done, but it was supposed to be this... a range and some facilities, and I don't know what happened there. What is it right now?
It's all there.
Okay.
Bubba Watson owns it.
Right,
right. Pensacola Golf Center, and that is city property. You have to keep in mind that that belongs to the city of Pensacola.
Okay.
It's on a lease, and it is essentially an easement extension of the airport.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that essentially works out to be at the square root of 4, carry the 2, southeast end of the runway.
Right.
And so you don't really want a good housing development there, but a driving range is a great use because it's obviously low density. And Bubba and Randall Wells and their team had an incredible plan, and I'm not going to say that the city might – I can neither confirm nor deny that city might be difficult to work with on things like that. But it just hasn't moved forward like they wanted to. But it's still a golf range, and it's still there. And
so the big plans haven't come true yet. But the small, but the driving range portion of it is operational.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I basically stumbled on that place on my bike several years ago, and I've kind of been wondering what had happened to it since.
Yep.
So
still open.
Brian, with the Gulf Coast Minority Chamber of Commerce, again, the name is sort of self-explanatory, but just in case, people might not be familiar with your work or what you do, you give them the elevator speech.
Yeah, the Gulf Coast Minority Chamber of Commerce really exists to help out small businesses, minority businesses, veteran businesses, with the helping to receive the ability to help to get some inequities gone in our community. So we get together, we form groups, we talk about the challenges as we have. We really are involved working with the city and the county, try to get more minority businesses to get contracts and bids with the county and the city, which is a big area of needed improvement.
So this has been a big push for several years. I know Commissioner May has pushed a lot for this. Mm-hmm. I think we even passed some ordinances to try to make that happen more, that there would be more requirement of minority contracting. Have we made progress in the last, say, 5 to 10 years? Have things gotten better for minority contractors being able to secure bids with the county or the city?
We definitely have made some progress with getting businesses registered. Getting the actual bids, we have not made a lot of progress in those areas, to be candid with you. I mean, I have some metrics, but I don't really want to you know, get them out there until I make sure that we have a good chance to get some background behind it. There's been lots of changes with the county and the city with leadership and the purchasing departments. There's been changes with new software, changes with personnel. And I just want to get a chance to make sure I review the metrics again and get them back out in the future. But minority businesses getting bids in the county and the city and many other areas of town is still very low.
Is the barrier on the government side, or is the barrier on the applicant side? If you had to pick a place to focus your efforts on improving things.
Really, I would say both. A lot of the minority businesses have challenges going through the registration process, lack of experience, generational wealth issues, and not having that background and experience. And one of our goals is to help them out in that area. From the government side, it really is the ability for a survey was done out called the Disparity Study in City of Pensacola 10 years ago. And the study basically said that a lot of the bids and contract goes to the bigger companies, mm-hmm. the good old boys, the way they described it. Even non-minority businesses in that disparity study, which was a 460-page document, $250,000 spent by the city, said that the challenges exist where the bids are not getting to those smaller, non-influential businesses, and many of those being minorities.
You know, it's interesting. We use that term like good old boys, but that's really just a sort of a shorthand version of who you know.
Exactly.
And being familiar. And Marty, I mean, like, you know, you work in the golf world, right? So how much business that gets conducted because people know each other over golf games or because they go golf together or just that kind of, you know, you hang out with the people who tend to look like you, tend to be in your social circles. And we don't think about how that can reinforce certain barriers just because that works. And so we don't go outside that.
That's one thing that we try to, I hesitate to use the word combat, but we try to eliminate by bringing, you know, young people of all diversities together.
Yeah.
And from all economic backgrounds, all social strata, and, you know, get them to understand we're not really as different as we think we are. You know, the reality is there are barriers, and if you have money, it's a lot easier to make money. If you've been in business, mm-hmm. I mean, Andrew, you talk a lot about politics on your program. Who's better prepared generally to win, the incumbent or the challenger?
Right.
The reality is the incumbent. So the guy who is running his grandfather's third generation company, it's not just that his grandfather knew the chief building inspector's grandfather and also the county commissioner's grandfather.
Right.
The reality is he's already got 186 employees. He's got a market cap of $3.6 million. He's already got 14 projects going. He's got 17 foremen out there working. He knows how to do this. The guy who's brand new to the business trying to kick in the door, he hopes he's got a sledgehammer.
Right, and it's you know, all of these things that, like you say, you're expert at it because you've done it, you're doing it, you're connected and involved and aware, and people know you, and even unintentionally, those can create barriers for the startup,
sure,
whether they're black, right, white, or anything. Mm-hmm. But especially if you have, you know, not wholly overlapping cultural relationships, your circle of friends, all of that stuff. And, you know, I know the Minority Gulf Coast Chamber of Commerce is kind of always trying to work on improving that. And I love the idea of bringing people together through sport.
Sure.
And especially a sport like golf, which is so tied into kind of the business community.
Right.
8:46 on News Radio 92.3. We're talking to Brian Wire and Marty Stanovich here on The Wrap. Candy's got traffic on the fives.
Highway 90 clear from Milton into P Ridge into Pace. And if you have traffic tips, text 437-1620, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, Candy. This week was Juneteenth. Monday was Juneteenth. And for several years now, you know, it became a holiday officially. Mm-hmm. President Biden made it a holiday in 2021. It is a holiday in Escambia County. It's a holiday for the city. It's not officially a state holiday, even though they've kind of recognized it as a day of significance. It's not the same. I always try to promote it because, to me, it's an American holiday. It's, you know, the ending of slavery. I mean, that's something we should celebrate, right? But even so, even being in favor of it, even celebrating it, and here's what Candy and I were kind of talking about this off the air the other day. I don't know who I would say, like, happy Juneteenth to. Like, if I see you in the grocery store, I might say Merry Christmas. You know, I might say Happy Easter. I might say Happy Thanksgiving. I'd be pretty reluctant to say happy Juneteenth to somebody, because if I'm saying it to somebody who's black, am I saying it to them because they're black? Mm-hmm. Is that appropriate? If they're white, would they even know what I'm talking about? It's kind of this, we're not quite there as a culture in terms of having embraced it. And so we're in an awkward place, to my mind, even of how to celebrate it. But also, these interactions are strange.
Yeah, it really is challenging for many people because of the fact that whole part about being uncomfortable. It's an uncomfortable topic to talk about that because it really celebrated a time that where Black people went through slavery for so long, went through horrible time periods. So you're celebrating the fact that that slavery is over, but it's uncomfortable for people to talk about it and to bring it up. It's also a very new holiday. It hasn't been around very long compared to others, so people are still getting used to it. I saw a lot of videos online about people, non-Black people, saying, what is Juneteenth? Why are we doing this? You know, I have no clue about it at all because it really hasn't gotten out there in full steam yet.
Yeah.
This year, I've seen more events, better coordinated, celebrating the Juneteenth day than I have in the past, and we're building it up and it's getting bigger and better. We have money allocated from the city towards Juneteenth events, and yeah. I was part of a planning committee for that to help see who got the money, and there were so many great causes out there. It's only going to get better at the time. It just takes some time to get the word out there and to get the message out there to everyone.
And I think for some people, white people, I'll say, perceive it as being a Black holiday,
mm-hmm.
And which I think is a mistake, but I think is culturally accurate, you know, that it is much more honored among Black people than it is among white people so far. Would you say Happy Juneteenth to somebody else who's Black?
I would say Happy Juneteenth. I would just talk about the day in general.
Okay.
I wouldn't necessarily say happy to them, but we talked about the fact of like Cinco de Mayo, St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah,
these are
all
events that are very
fun and
well
food
known.
And history.
Fun, foodie, right. Food partying. And people even say, hey, I'm going to have some Juneteenth food. I'm going to have some Black food. People will say, and it's kind of uncomfortable to talk about having Black food versus non-Black
which Black food
you're
going to have exactly.
Exactly. You know,
what's on the buffet? Let's talk.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it still just really hasn't quite made it out there all the way. And I think the non-Black community, the Black community is embracing it more and learning more about the history of it and celebrating it more. But it's still some time to take place for that to happen.
I'm curious, Marty, what's your kind of...
I spent 14 years as a college history professor.
Yeah.
And so my background prior to talk radio, prior to, you know, being a CEO of a nonprofit, was teaching mostly American history, but also classical civilizations, you know, and Juneteenth was part of the modern half of American history.
Interesting.
Unlike Cinco de Mayo and St. Patrick's Day are not federal holidays. So let's
exactly.
go ahead and point that out right now.
Good note.
You know, I am completely Juneteenth neutral in this sense. Most people out there in America, when it comes to Memorial Day, Labor Day, oh, goodness, Thanksgiving. They don't eat, you know, Good Friday. Maybe Good Friday is slightly different.
Might be,
but on
be,
most
yeah.
of these,
I get
MLK
where you're going.
Day, the vast majority of people, because, you know, the reality is they're government employee and bank holidays.
Right.
School holidays sometimes, too. I guarantee you the vast majority of people look at it as another day off mm-hmm. and don't give any consideration to the meaning behind it. Do I consider that as a problem? Well, what do you think I was trying to do as a history professor?
Right.
I was trying to stamp out ignorance. I want people to come to a level of understanding
yes.
of how history and the teleology of history and the progression of history, how do we get to where we are right now today? And what was the process to this point? And you know, Juneteenth is a significant part of it. If I said Middle Passage, the reality is Brian probably knows what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You're a college educator. You know what I'm talking about. I'd go more than 50% of the people listening right now are going to have to Google what the Middle Passage is.
Right.
Sorry. That's just the reality of life, people.
So I'm kind of curious with that in mind that, you know, there's been a lot of changes in Florida law regarding the teaching of American history, certainly. And I was just listening to somebody who, I think it was at the Santa Rosa County Commission meeting, I think is who I was listening to. And she was a teacher who taught it. Yeah, she taught at Gulf Breeze and she taught debate. And she said, but I don't teach anymore because with the changes in the law, I'm so worried that I might run afoul of something I'm not supposed to say it the wrong way. I might inspire a lawsuit. I might get sued or something like that, that I just don't even feel comfortable in that. And I talked to somebody else who was having that same situation, a younger teacher, like a second grade teacher. And she said, I'll be honest with you, it's becoming really unfun to teach these days because we're all so scared of which book or which lesson plan or which word is going to get us in trouble. You know, I taught college level philosophy, but
right.
you can't you can't teach when you're scared of teaching getting you in trouble, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, tenure was created for a reason, because we need to be able to get out there and talk about controversial subjects. We need to be able to talk about the realities of slavery and its role socially, historically, economically in the building of this nation and a lot of the difficulties of this nation. You know, post-Civil War, Reconstruction period, Jim Crow era. I mean, that's what I taught. And yeah, I think it's a very, very, why do you think they're like rats from a sinking ship in the world of teaching? Because you're underpaid, you're underappreciated, and you say one thing wrong between this ridiculous social media era that we live in, and also the restrictions on teaching, you no longer have a career. And think about, I look back, I'm a product of public education.
Me too.
Until I arrived at Tulane for my PhD, I literally never went to anything that wasn't a public school, college, or university, ever. And I had great teachers, Andrew. I had phenomenal
Same.
Teachers.
Yeah.
All colors, black, white, Hispanic, Asian. I mean, it was just ran the gamut, and they were passionate about what they did, and they were great at what they did. You know, but the problem is we keep kicking this political football into areas. And look, there are some things that we really need to leave. You're raising kids. Yeah, there's some things, you know, I don't think
we homeschooled for a reason.
Think, yeah. I don't think your kindergarten teacher needs to be determining the gender of your child.
Or hiding it from you if they're, yeah,
okay.
All of that.
I mean, the reality is there is a role for parenting, mm-hmm. and there is a role for a teacher. But no amount of money would ever send me back to teaching in the public school system these days.
And see, that was kind of the question, story. Yeah.
And one of the things, too, that Marty, you mentioned about losing your career, it's not only your career, it's your reputation now.
Oh, 100%.
With social media, you say the one thing wrong, and it gets out there, you're branded, and you're
exactly.
placed in a situation that's really tough. If I go to an area, and I'm in a picture with somebody with a plantation dress on, or someone that, you know, is a... maybe, you know, insensitive towards cultural things,
yeah.
that's it for me. Not only my career, but my personal life. You could be placed around an entire world on social media, banishing you for that. And I always offer people some grace. People should have grace when they don't know. People don't know some things, and they do some things,
it's
and you have to
thought.
Educate them and let them know that this is what it really is. After you let them know that, they still go that route, then that's a different story.
You know,
but give grace.
Eventually, though, Brian, we're going to have to take back social media. I'm sorry. Yeah. The death of common sense has taken over mm-hmm. America, and it is ridiculous to think that somebody could spend their entire life focusing on something as good as a career as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about what you do. You are making a lifelong commitment to have to get a level of education, then continuing education, to keep your teaching certificate yep. and go in there for a very low amount of money. Now, high quality of life, mm-hmm. a lot of challenges, low amount of money.
A lot of personal
you're never
reward.
Be wealthy.
I mean,
you build the relationships with, as you know, that teacher-student
it's
relationship.
A very rich experience.
Incredible, absolutely. But the fact that one wrong misstep can literally throw out decades of incredible hard work. That's ridiculous, and that's what's wrong with social media in this country. And eventually, those of us like you and I, Andrew, who want to do the right thing and do it well,
mm-hmm.
you know what? We've got to take that back.
Right.
Yeah, this idea of defining people based on their one worst even, or even just one taken out of context moment mm-hmm. in their life. It's no way to treat humanity. And,
yeah,
you know, like you say, how can you function in that environment? We're talking to Marty Stanovich and Brian Wire here on The Wrap. Let's get traffic on the fives from Candy.
Again, not showing any delays. It looks like Highway 90 is clear all the way through in Milton into Pace into Pensacola, and 98 clear from Navarre into Gulf Breeze into Pensacola. Certainly, if you have a traffic tip, text 437-1620, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, Candy. This week we had, I consider it really big news in terms of fighting crime, which we had the announcement that ShotSpotter got funded by the governor. He didn't veto it, which means it went through. The city and the county, Escambia County, our sheriff's office are coordinating on the zones where they're going to, you know, implement the ShotSpotter. It allows police or sheriffs to respond immediately to a shot fired. It discriminates between a bullet sound and a firecracker or a backfire or a trash can being dropped or whatever. To me, this is revolutionary, and I weirdly find myself thinking, my God, we might finally be able to get a grip on the shootings and the violence in this area. Brian, I almost feel like I got to talk myself out of being too optimistic.
Well, I think technology and ability to help find ways to do this is just amazing. I mean, if it's out there, let's use it and put it in place and find out the source and origin of where this is happening. So I think it's just an amazing. I was at the press conference when they talked about it.
Yeah.
And I was just truly impressed in the fact that we're using this kind of it's amazing when you think about it, like sci-fi, the fact that you're looking for different noises and sounds and being able to detect what that is. It's just beyond belief, I mean, mostly how it works, but it's I'm so glad it's there and things can make a difference in our environment.
That the computer can basically listen to the sound, determine it is a bullet or, you know, it's not, decide, okay, that's a 9mm. Oh, that 9mm is moving. So we know the car is traveling and we know where it's going. We can relay that information to the cop arriving to the scene. Yeah. When previously they would have had to go to somebody's home and be like, so where do you think you heard that? You're not sure what it is noise again?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is...
Oh, it is. It's incredibly revolutionary. A lot of people are going to say it's Big Brother watching you. And absolutely, Big Brother is watching you. And if you're doing nothing wrong, you got nothing to worry about.
You know, that's one thing about, you know, the sort of cameras are part of this.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Cameras, a lot of which already exist. I find myself torn, frankly, on the cameras because we have cameras on our house. You know, a lot of people have cameras. They're incredibly valuable for determining who committed a crime, for solving things after the fact. And we're nowhere close to like enemy of the state kind of stuff where they can just watch you all the time. But you know that future has got to be coming.
Oh, well, the future's already here.
No, and in some places, it's like that already.
If a crime is committed in your neighborhood, they're going to come to you and say, hey, can we see your video camera footage?
That's right.
We're going to work backwards. We're going to track down what's going on, and we're going to help to solve the crime. The reality is it is already here. And you have to do longitudinal research and extrapolate statistics and say, hey, 10 years ago, this did not exist. But 10 years from now, we're going to look back and go, have we been safer? Well, you know what? Shootings went down 66%. Crime in this region went down 72%. And if not, then it was a complete waste of time and money.
And that's going to be part of the real-time crime center, which the sheriff is standing up in conjunction with the ShotSpotter and everything else.
Yeah.
So.
And with the ShotSpotter also, it helps to take some of the pressure off of the innocent people in the area that don't want to report this is going on.
Because it will always
there's a fear.
Report.
I mean, in the environment, there's cases we have, but there's a whole fear involved with that.
News Radio 90.